On this episode of Sales Burrito, we're going to talk about erratic sales reps and managers that often make things tough for you, the sales engineer. Being erratic means not even or regular in a pattern or movement, someone that is unpredictable. Their inconsistency in running their business is such that disrupts the well-being of a sales engineer in more ways than one. We will have a special guest sharing his perspective on this topic and how to overcome such behavior. So stay tuned to Sales Burrito. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time! Welcome to Sales Burrito! Your podcast for today's sales engineers working in technology sales, created by SEs for SEs, with your hosts Enrique Barreto and Dave Siles.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time for the weekly dose of knowledge chips and some salsa burrito, or salsa burrito. Can't even name my own podcast.
May I offer you some tequila for the Southland Burrito?
Right. So welcome back to Sales Burrito. I am your co-host, Dave Siles. With me, as always, is Enrique Barreto.
He is getting, on the scale of 1-10, he's getting 9 on the rolling of the R's. Listen, man.
It's a Canadian judge. I can't win the perfect 10 yet.
It's a skill set that requires a lot of time.
I'm going to give myself my own round of applause. I thought that was pretty good.
And I would like to introduce a special guest with us today on this topic of erratic sales reps, right? With me, the one and only Pesh. What are you doing, man? How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing excellent. I'm living the Rona dream, like I'm sure you all are out there. And I'm just happy to be on here, too. This is a fun topic. I've had a little bit of experience with it, and I think it'll be neat to get your guys' thoughts, your exposure to stuff like this over the past years, too. So, yeah, man, I'm glad to be here. I would like to request.
Okay.
Every good chip deserves a good queso. So maybe we could start wrapping some queso into that. And being being that I'm from the Texas area, maybe I'll be your guys' queso to your chips and salt today.
Listen, we're always looking for sponsors. So, you know, brought to you by Pesh Queso, the best queso in the land. You know what I mean?
There you go. We've been working on it. You know, I love the guy can go by only one name. You know, like, you know, you have Madonna, you have Britney in the world. We just have Pesh.
It's bold, right?
It is bold. You know, well, so Dave, go big, Dave, go bad, and go home.
So, Dave, what you know, give us a synopsis, man. What, you know, obviously we share the episode with you, and we've been collaborating on this. So, you know, how do you see it?
Yeah, well, you know, I think there's one thing that we all deal with at some point in our career, and that's the unpredictable. And when that unpredictable is on your sales team, you know, it can make your life very interesting. And so, you know, one of the things that you don't get taught, you have to learn kind of in the trenches, is how you deal with that erratic side of a sales team, whether you're the erratic piece of it or maybe your sales rep is. And, you know, that's behavior that can really become unbecoming to a team. And so, you know, from the perspective of how it impacts a team, you know, how you can deal with it, things that we've learned, you know, really how you can build that tough skin. That's what this whole episode's about. And, you know, we look forward, obviously, to getting Pesh's input into it, because, you know, Pesh has got some experience, obviously, in the industry that mirrors the long line of ours, that the ability to really kind of share insight. And we like bringing in outside opinions. So it's just not always Enrique and Dave says. It's now Pesh says.
No, I agree. So listen, you know, let's start with this. And I started the teaser with this, right? Which is, you know, the definition of erratic, right? Which is something that is not even, that is irregular, that has an unpredictable pattern, right? And when you apply the word erratic to, you know, in this case, a sales rep, it can mean many things. For example, you can have a sales rep that is unpredictable at attaining sales goals, meeting or exceeding their quotas, right? They've been with the company for 6 quarters, 7 quarters, and still are struggling. It could be something as, you know, in front of prospects, in front of customers or value-added resellers. There is one sales rep that I've known in the industry, in the area where I live, where I can tell you that if you walk to 10 value-added resellers, they basically said, I don't want that guy there. Or if he's building alliances with different organizations, the district managers of all those different alliances do not want to work with that person because of an erratic behavior that it has. What about you, Pesh? What are you, what are some things that you see on when we, when we're talking about erratic sales reps?
I mean, both of the, or all of those are great examples. But just quality of work is one of them as well. There's just a sort of an inconsistency bit there too. But then also, I think, how do I put the words around this? Just are they helpful? Are they teaming well? Right. So while some of those other things are measurable, like the sales goals, attainability, like are they presentable, that kind of a thing. The other one is a bit softer where it's like, how well are you able to team, whether it's you and an AE or whether it's you in a leadership role and your peer on the sales side too. So those are what I would add.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that one of the things that that I often reference on seeing these type of individuals in the field is when it comes to the sales engineer, if you have that erratic sales rep, it can affect the morale of that sales engineer, and it brings a lot of self-doubt. You know, I've seen it. Unfortunately, I've seen it a lot where, you know, I become Dr. Phil for that sales engineer because his sales rep is, you know, throwing him under the bus on different things and whatnot, and becomes a lot of noise, a lot of unnecessary noise that typically is not sustained by evidence. It's some noise so that, because that individual needs to find a way to filter or channel the reasons why he's not meeting his objectives, right? I guess unfairly, I've used the term when I was in IT, greasy sales guy, right? You know, if I take my sales leader hat off and I just put my customer hat on, right? Sometimes you see this moniker of greasy sales guy, which is the guy that shakes your hand and all he cares is about getting your PO, which in our industry, it's okay, but, and it is their job, but they make it so obvious to the customer that it's uncomfortable to the customer itself. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it does. I mean, everybody knows when, you know, that persona comes in, that's just going to be, you know, the chief sales guy with the gold chain, and he's there just to say anything to get the deal done, right? And I think we've all been there. We've all felt that. And it's not necessarily a good feeling. You know, I think, you know, sometimes I think it's just the fact that the reps are not confident in what they're doing. And so they have to come up with this persona to try to present themselves. You know, sometimes it's all about the fact that they are looking for an excuse, and, you know, they never can do anything wrong, but, you know, they can't hold themselves accountable in the sales equation. There's a lot of different situations, but it really kind of manifests in a kind of couple different ways that just happen to roll over. And unfortunately, sometimes these are the most successful reps, right? They get in, they land, they win a couple of deals, they have a name for themselves, and then these problems start present. And then you either have the problem, do you keep them around and try to fix them? And historically speaking, I've seen that where that becomes a, you know, splinter under the skin and starts becoming a festered problem. Or, you know, you have to have a strong leadership team that's really willing to identify them, manage them out, and really cut the cancer off before it becomes a problem. But they typically, in my historical experience, have built this little bit of a track record, and they just can keep jumping job to job to job. And, you know, really breaking that cycle, it's like someone needs to sit somebody down and say, hey, look, you know, you're a great sales rep, but you got to change this kind of operandi and get some accountability on yourself. But I know that, you know, Pesh, you know, you've got some experience here. This is one of the reasons why you wanted to come and join us for this topic. So what about you? What's your take on it?
You know, I think sometimes too that, like, sometimes it's not always the rep's fault. It's sometimes the pressure that they're getting from above too, right? They're seeing examples of a pushy behavior, or a just talk like this, or be that way. Or maybe they came from an organization where you know, maybe it was more churn and burn. So there wasn't time for the niceties and to really get to know someone too. So, you know, they could have been a product of their upbringing, or they could just be under tremendous pressure from above to perform a certain way. And they think that that means the other way. So I always try to figure out or learn, you know, is this them being a jerk? Is this their nature, or is there an external force trying to push them that way too? So, you know, I think that's another thing to be considered of too, that might fit into that erratic behavior for those folks too.
Yeah. I mean, I think in my personal opinion, to me, it's all about, you know, self-accountability. So when I see that erratic sales behavior, and I agree with both of you's point, right? These individuals are volatile, they're hard to handle because, you know, quite frankly, they like to blame others for their issues, right? You know, we all know that excuses are excuses. And when you're not being self-accountable for what you're supposed to be delivering, you don't have the, you know, it's going to open those things. It's going to open those doors. Sometimes, to your point, Pesh, sometimes they don't even understand that they're erratic because they're running so fast without realizing that their own ecosystem is judging them, right? And you have to kind of, they have to stop, right? I think another reason why this exists as well is sometimes attributed to sales managers. And just hear me out, you know, there's different swaggers, different positions, they've closed millions of dollars. They'll use that personification. They use that chip on their shoulder to say, I've done this, so therefore you need to do, you know, what I do. So I agree with all that kind of stuff. Basically, it is a domino effect. You can make mistakes in hiring people, but you can't continue to make that mistake all the time. Meaning, you're going to have that VP of sales talking to the sales manager saying, your guy, your sales rep is not bringing this. So there's pressure from everywhere in the chain. So, you know, well said, right? Now, let me ask you this, guys. Obviously, joining a team, right? You have to make sure that that the company has the right culture. But at the micro side of things, you have to make sure that you're not joining a team where there is an erratic sales rep. So what are some of the strategies that you guys can think on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think DNA is very important, right? I mean, in today's landscape, you know, a sales engineer and the sales account manager that they're paired with, you know, they're a team, right? team for a reason. And so if you're joining a team and you haven't had a chance to really understand and meet your person you're going to be paired with, you know, you're already behind the eight ball. So, I mean, having that ability to get in the interview process, get to understand not only who is going to be managing you from your sales engineering side and management chain, but, you know who your counterpart's going to be, how are they being managed, and get a chance to connect with them, you know, whether that's you personally reaching out, identifying who that person's going to be, meeting them for coffee or breakfast. You know, you got to have that kind of, you know, chemistry 101 session. And if you don't have that, you know, you're really in trouble, because if you get hired on and then you're there, then you're trying, you know, then you're going to marriage counseling while you're trying to be productive at the same time, right? And I think that's why one of the things companies typically do when they're hiring people is they try to bring teams in, right? I mean, high performing teams, you see them go from place to place to place.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
And they do that because, you know, once they've built that relationship, that bond is almost the intangible value add of that team. 1 + 1 = 4 almost, you know.
Well, it reminds me of a story that, you know, when I did the transition from IT manager to sales engineer, I had this great sales rep, you know, at Data Domain, where, you know, we had a meeting for 30 minutes. Our meeting was over 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And it, you know, we met at a Starbucks. We talked about what they were requirements and the expectations for the job. But then after that, it was about conquering the world. It was about, you know, the love for making our brand be known and, you know, making as much money as possible, because we were both carrying quota. Even until this day, you know, unfortunately, that sales rep, something happened in the organization that I was where, you know, there was a coup de grace and they literally let him know. I call it the Game of Thrones, unfortunately, but it happened. But even up to this day, if he reaches out to me with an innovative idea or something, I help him. I help him and I'm side by side with him, because I believed in what he, the way that he mentored me, the way that I mentor him, and we were productive, you know, equally. Now, what about you, Pesh?
You know, I think that it's very difficult to, this is like a pro level interviewing thing, right? When you're interviewing, you're trying to sell yourself on being the best resource that this company can bring in, right? So you fill a bill, right? You should also have like general questions that you want to know. It's like, hey, what is the quota? How are you guys as far as attainment goes, right? And I think to really get deeper into that, to try to figure out, am I going to be on a team? Like, I think that this is a great topic to talk about, because I don't think you're going to think about that in an interviewing process as you interview a company to go work for, unless you've been hit by this before. So this is really, really good. And I think the timing is great to get people ahead of this before. But one thing maybe that they could do is this. We use a lot of sports analogies, right? Sales is a very aggro, male-dominated environment, and sports kind of come along with it. So the concept of a quarterback is one that you need to clue into just a little bit. Every great team has a quarterback, but it's not always going to be just the quarterback that wins the game, right? It's other players that are around there too. So what I mean by this is like to try to dig in and figure out what the pairing of the SE and the AE look like. Is it a real team, or does the term quarterback mean they're the boss and the SE is subordinate to this, right? I think that could be a good indicator to look for, and to really determine whether or not that's kind of a cultural fit for you too, right? It might be. Me personally, it's not. I get way more creativity when I have someone who wants to partner in team versus who just would rather me be a resource for them to use as they need, right?
You make a very good point that I overlook, right? To your point, there's some sales engineers that might want that relationship. And I have seen it where... Yeah. Where the sales engineer is basically acts upon whatever the mandates of the sales rep is. And that's maybe perfectly fine. But to your point, I believe that the best teams are where the teams are equal when they're sales, you know. And yes, the sales rep is always going to be the quarterback, but that sales engineer can call an audible, and he's able to say, hey, what you're doing is it's not going to work because of this. Let's do this, right? I think that this subordinate posture, right, comes sometimes with what I call the old world of enterprise sales. And I've seen it time and time again as I'm interviewing sales reps as well, where, you know, they'll talk about, hey, I really don't know anything about the technology. I've sold millions of dollars throughout my career. I'm just here to actually give the customer the Morton's experience or take him out to a concert or anything like that. We have to be a student of a game, you know, and be able to there's the hunting and farming, which is for another episode of what happens into accounts. Sales teams have to be able to modulate between both, man. So what about you, Jay?
Yeah, you know, you're making all great points. I mean, I think one of the things you really need to do as part of helping identify this is, you know, get involved in the hiring process. We talked about this a little bit ago, but, you know, understand when you're coming in, ask, you know, whether it's the headhunter or the recruiter that you're working with, or even the SE manager you're going to work with, you know, what's the tenure of the sales rep you're going to get paired with, right? You know, how long have they been there with the company? Are they new as well? And if they've been there for a while, you know, ask them for their track record, right? Track records speak volumes. You know, are they putting up quarter over quarter, or are they just mediocre? You know, because you obviously, you're coming in and you haven't had that chemistry building. You want to have that kind of DNA alignment with that person. And, you know, and I frankly, if you're an engineer, you know, find out if they're burning and turning, you know, other SEs. Are you the fifth in line, you know, the first in line, you know, because that's a typical telltale stat pattern that, you know, you've got one of these maniacal, kind of erratic sales guys that really are just there for the me, don't care about the we of the team, and, you know, are there just to move and step on the way up. And, you know, not to put the stereotypes on it, but, you know, there's some personas I think that you can see, and patterns that, you know, I think we've all kind of seen, we kind of joke about the gold chain side of it, but there are certain things I think you can identify, you know, from those personas. You really kind of, you have to trust your gut. You know, the gut feel, I always trust my gut, and my gut's never served me wrong when I followed it, you know.
No, I agree. Listen, there's nothing wrong with wearing the Rolex watch or having the M Series BMW. I think that, as a matter of fact, that's okay. That's a sign of a very successful sales rep. Question is, do they have the humility to be able to not showcase what they have and not gloat on what they have and be able to be just a normal person? So you make very good points with that. Now, Pesh, let me ask you this, because you've had, you know, I know you've had some stories with this in the past, right? How do you spot and develop, you know, tough skin when you're managing erratic sales reps or even managing erratic sales managers?
You know, so I want to tell a little bit of the story without, you know, stepping over any boundaries. So I'll try to keep it like this. Like, yeah, that has happened a few times and before. And I think if I had to distill it down to really just a couple of things that I could do, was one was to just really figure out what I could control. And I realize I'm skipping over the, how did I realize this thing was happening? So we'll peel that back in a few seconds. But like, what is in my control as an SE or an SE manager, right? And how do I want to go about excelling at what I'm good at given those boundaries, right? So I will say this, that if you find yourself in an environment where you are encountering someone who is erratic, and then you start to hear the blame game come up and things like that, it really wreaks havoc on, at least mine. So I won't speak for everybody, but it wreaks havoc on kind of your confidence. Like, I develop a little bit of a daddy complex in that you get a little bit timid. Like, all right, I'm in front of a customer. I'm with this person. I don't feel like they like me. I don't feel like that they trust me as my partner here. And I don't like that relationship. So you may not step out and be as bold or aggressive in a campaign, or you might be a little bit less willing to go the extra mile or whatever. But point is you're artificially limiting your capabilities when you can do more. And I think that the advice that I would give on this portion here is that, like, do you, like, figure out, you know what value you bring to the organization and to the things that are taking place right here. You got to just do what you can do to make an impact, right? The things that you can control, like, how well are you at presenting? How technical are you within your given skill set? How much is curiosity driving what you do? Meaning, are you curious about what the customer is doing so that you can shape solutions with your technology for their problems? Or can you recommend other people for them to talk to and really be more valuable? Like, your network is part of your value as much as your technical skill set is. So, you know, identify the things that you can actually bring to the table and that you can control, and work those. Just work them, you know. As far as like how to spot this, I would say really paying attention to either the rumor mill or the gossip, you know, column or whatever. That, you know, there's no real, like, I don't know, what is it, watering hole, or you know, we don't
have that exist anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't meet at the water cooler. Yeah, we're not in the Serengeti. We're not at a watering hole. What am I talking about? the watering hole, or I said it again. Dang it. You're not meeting in the break room and chatting or overhearing people talking about you're getting weird vibes. But when you do start to hear, you know, feedback come to you that people are, you know, that this is being done, and you understand that the blame is being put on you, you know, first, accept responsibility for what's yours. Enrique, we've talked about this before. You know, Extreme Ownership is a great book by Jocko Willink, and wonderful to listen to and a wonderful resource. Resonates with me from a military background, but it was very practical and corporate-wise here too. It's just about owning what is yours. So if you can own what's yours and you can fix what's yours, that's fine. Do that.
Yeah,
that's part of you.
Yeah,
blame game, yeah. You know?
Yeah, I think if you can control what you can control, then, you know, you have to take that area of domain and take the responsibility to go for it. You know, there's things I think in SE, you know, we just have to think about if we're stuck with that erratic sales rep and we're going through marriage counseling, but we can't mm-hmm. necessarily divorce them. You know, do what you can do, right? Make sure you're visiting your install base as often as possible. you know, really show the love to your customers. Because at the end of the day, you still have to make the sale. You still have to take care of your customers, and you still have to continue to build opportunities for, you know, your livelihood, your future. And obviously, you know, there's nothing to stop you from being, you know, the backup to the quarterback, right? Always next man up mentality. And just because you may not be stuck in the most ideal situation, you really got to be doing it. But you also got to be covering yourself, right? I mean, I think this is where, you know, hopefully you're working in an organization that's got an open door policy where you can go to your manager's manager or go to HR if you have that that a facility. But if you're not, making sure you keep that paper trail, right? Copy all the verbose information you can into Salesforce. Make sure you're sending emails with, you know, byline CC so that there's a lot of visibility so that when the tail of the tape comes down, you know, you can prove out your side of the story. And, you know, these strong one-sided reps, you know, we break the chain, right? We have the ability to protect ourselves. And really, if you've got a really good, strong SE manager, and I hope you do, you know, they should be able to know that you're doing what's expected of you. They can expect your work and you can show that you're delivering through, and hopefully you'll be able to change the situation.
One of the things that that I've also recommend to a lot of people, and this is not very well known, is the beware of the infamous 360 trap. A 360 is when let's say, for example, you're a sales engineer, you're talking to the SC manager, and you say, "Gosh, my guy is, you know, it's not working out. It's telling me to work long hours. It's telling me to do different things," and I'm showing him the changes, and I'm doing a lot of the stuff that he's asking me, but he continues not to be happy with me. And when you're talking to the SE manager by nature is going to have that connection with the sales manager, right? Which is the boss of the sales rep. And sometimes the sales manager will take the approach of doing what they call the 360, which is the sales manager will go directly to the SC and ask, "Hey, how's your sales rep doing? I'm hearing that he's not good at this. He's bad at this. What can you tell me about him?" All that kind of stuff. While in some instances that does work, I have seen this where it has failed tremendously because I've seen sales managers basically throw the sales engineer under the bus. I mean, it would say, "Hey, your sales engineer did this." This happened to me early on in my career. I had a sales manager that was questioning a sales rep that I was running with. And I was very frank and sincere with that sales manager. That sales manager went and told my sales rep. My sales rep confronted me, and I destroyed that relationship that I had with him because I open and say what I thought. So I don't want you guys to go through that. So if you ever hear such a situation, just use the scapegoat of, "Hey, I've given all the information to my SE manager. Let's make sure that we all have a call and we meet to review it." Because ultimately, you don't want to go alone in that situation where the sales manager runs and says, "Yes, I just had a conversation with your SE and he said that." You gotta, and ultimately, guys, you know, Dave, you taught me this a long time ago, which is if you're not generally happy with what you're doing, if you're not happy with the situation, you have to go. So if you've tried everything in your power to make sure that things change, and you know, there'll be different changes. Like, for example, the SE manager may say, "Hey, I'm going to put you with a different sales rep." So it's not that the SE manager is not going to do whatever is in his power to make sure that you're happy. He's going to try everything. But if it boils down to no change, leave. Make sure you're happy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a firm believer, you know, we all work hard and life's short, you know, you should be happy doing it. And you know, you're in the right job if you're doing your job and it doesn't feel like work. Right. And, yeah, and I know it's not the same for everybody. Not everybody can make the change and make the decision, but you really deserve to be happy. I agree. And, you know, I think, you know, from a kind of just a captain's perspective, you know, it's never going to be perfect everywhere. But, you know, if you're going to balance it out at the end of the day, the scale should tip in your favor, right? Any parting thoughts, Pesh? I mean, obviously, we appreciate having you on the show today. I mean, you know, I think this has been a great topic that, you know, just as timely, you know, as people start making into the fourth quarter. I think the fourth quarter is always kind of that grow up, grow out phase, and people start making the decision of they're staying or going.
Yeah, I would say this on the very last thing we were talking about. I talked to a lot of folks, and when it comes down to just like what you're saying, I think there's two options when you're talking about like, should I do this with my career? Should I whatever, right? Like that. If it's not hell yeah, like enthusiastically, like hell yeah, do you love where you're at? Hell yeah. If it's not that, it's no. And if it's no, that's your indicator too that like you should follow that gut. You know, Dave, you said that your gut's never failed you. And I think it's because you've got that internal like barometer that's like, I need to pay attention to this little twinge I'm getting right now and do that. So, you know, if you can, if you have a mentor out there that's asked you, yo, you know, are you happy? Are you digging it? Is this fun? Is this what you want to do? And it's not an emphatic hell yeah, then it's probably a no. And you should think about that. Mm-hmm. Qualify out, right? That's what we do. He's like, qualify yourself out of that role.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, listen, Pesh, thank you so much for being part of this episode. Just kind of, guys, kind of to summarize, right? Understanding what an erratic sales rep or an erratic behavior is super important for your business, for your well-being. So hope that this was very helpful for you. Obviously, continue to tune in every week. Every Wednesday, we're releasing podcasts about our shows, and we have different shows. If you have suggestions, reach us out at salesburrito.com. Reach us out to Twitter, LinkedIn, all the different platforms. Dave, I know that we're trying also to track different subscribers, and we're going to be giving burritos for a week, for a year. What's up with that, man?
We are, yeah. So, you know, I've got this little digital counter that's running up now. I think we're like at 125 people on Twitter. Yeah, well,
look at that.
Technology, right? But yeah, we get to 1,000 subscribers on Twitter, 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. We're going to draw a name from one of those subscribers, and we'll message you. So obviously, if you're following us, we'll be able to DM you back. But essentially, you know, one burrito a week is good, but two burritos a week is better. So we'll give away essentially burrito a week for the year, which, you know, should be a pretty tasty prize. And don't forget, we've got the candidate spotlight as well. So if you want to be featured in a future upcoming episode, maybe you're outside of your current career, or you're coming into the sales engineering career, or maybe you're in the industry and you were just currently displaced because of COVID and you want to get featured, you know, upload your video submission 3 minutes or less to this candidate spotlight. And we'll pick out you to be featured in a future episode. And so until next time, this has been Sales Burrito, and Enrique will take us away.
Well, like always, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing. Have a good day, everyone.
We hope you've enjoyed the Sales Burrito Show. To subscribe to catch future episodes wherever you catch your favorite podcast. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Sales Burrito. Until next time, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing.